evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, November 27, 2015. The former detainees return to Juba.
We have come finally and to work for peace in this country because this is our historic responsibilities as citizens of South Sudan, but most importantly, as members of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement.
And rebel leader Riek Machar is giving IGAD new conditions.
There are issues that we need to discuss between us. And then I send my advance party, I come and assure my advance team that things are all right. They can go ahead before I join them.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A group of former political detainees return home today after spending nearly 2 years in exile in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The former ministers were detained at the start of the conflict in late 2013, accused of being part of a coup attempt. They were eventually released, but refused to join either side during the 21 months of conflict, choosing instead to remain neutral. Former detainee Paganda Moon signed the peace agreement in August on behalf of the detainees. Philip Tonaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
The 13 former detainees stepped off a plane at Juba Airport today to the cheers of waiting supporters. Former Minister of Justice John Luke, who is the spokesperson for the former detainees, says their return should translate into peace for the South Sudanese people who have endured untold suffering for the last 23 months.
We are assuring them that we have come finally and to work for peace in this country because this is our historic responsibilities as citizens of South Sudan, but most importantly, as members of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement.
Luke says the leader of former detainees, Paganda Amom, is in the U.S. and will come home soon, but did not elaborate. Luke urged the SPLM in position to send their representatives to Juba so the signed peace agreement can be implemented. That call was echoed by Information Minister Michael Makwei.
Because the implementation of the agreement is no longer in Addis Ababa, but it will be here in South Sudan. So I appeal from here to the IO to follow suit and join us in the peace process.
Among those returning home is Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabure, widow of the late South Sudanese leader John Greng. After stepping off the plane, Nyandeng went straight to the gravesite of her husband, where she said a silent prayer, then composed herself and led about 100 supporters in a cheer.
Long live South Sudan!
Nyandeng made a promise to her late husband as she stood at his graveside.
Never leave your side, and I will never leave your people, and you know that, and I know you are with me all the time. What I need is peace for our people, and you know that you need peace for your people, and you died for them, and that's why we are here. We are here for peace for people of Southern Sudan.
She said returning home with senior SPLM leaders is a strong indication that the peace agreement will be fully implemented. Nyandeng says she is confident that nothing will prevent South Sudan from enjoying the freedom its people fought and died for.
We ask God, Jesus Christ, to give us all the strength so that we implement this peace. This peace was not brought by individual, but God brought this peace for the people of South Sudan. There will be no more suffering. People of South Sudan will have their freedom. And we have accepted, and we are going to embrace peace, all of us.
Nyandeng did not take questions from reporters. She went straight to her family home in the upper suburb of Juba, where she was received by more joyous supporters. For VOA News, I am Philip Onanleu in Juba.
The leader of the SPLM in opposition says he wants to meet President Salva Kiir to talk about security issues before the SPLM IO advance team arrives in Juba. Riek Machar says his advance team will not travel to Juba if the government continues to attack his troops in eastern Equatorial State. He says he's ready to implement the peace deal, but wants assurances from the president that Juba is completely safe for himself and his team.
we support the fact that the JMAC, that is the Joint Monitoring Evaluation Commission, be launched, okay? We have total support to the JMAC. We want the chairman of the JMAC to assume his responsibilities. But then, unfortunately, the timing was not coordinated. The venue was not agreed. So, and it got us, we're still having meetings arranging our advance party that is going to Juba. You know that we have publicly announced that we're sending 500 of our members to Juba. We were in the process. We had just finished today naming our members who are members of the advance party.
JMAC and IGAD saying that they had written to you in advance informing you about the developments that are happening in Juba, the launching of the JMAC and the returning of the former detainees, and they were expecting you to be part of the team in Juba, or rather your group to be part of the team in Juba.
That was 4 days ago. We learned of it. We got an invitation to two of our members. As you know, that we're represented by two high-ranking members of our movement. And, you know, we have no presence in Juba. We have not yet broken the ice of what is happening in Juba. I had written to the Prime Minister of Ethiopia, who replied me 2 days ago. I had requested that a meeting between me and President Salva be arranged. Well, since we signed the agreement separately, you know, I signed on the 17th of August and he signed 9 days later. We have not met. There are issues that we need to discuss between us. And then I send my advance party, I come and assure my advance team that things are all right. They can go ahead before I join them. This has not happened. Instead, I was told such a meeting should only take place in Juba. I think the people forget that there has been a very serious war and that there is a lot of violations. 3 days ago, our assembly area was attacked, air raid by the government, where they killed 23 people, including two Brigadier Generals. It's not a simple thing. We are for peace.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like your group is not certain about their security if they go to Juba. Is that right?
That is true. These are the issues that I want to discuss, nitty-gritty issues. President and his first vice president to discuss. Because how do I send that big number of people without the president assuring me that things are all right when his air force is bombarding our assembly areas? You know that? The containment areas.
Is there any reasons for South Sudanese to believe that you are ready to implement this peace agreement?
I just want to tell you, we have now compose our advance team. We have been sitting for the last 2 weeks organizing ourselves and selecting our advance team. They are ready to go to Juba.
And when will they travel?
When I get assurances, John.
The former detainees returned to Juba and Madame Rebecca Nyandeng also accompanied them. And all they are saying to South Sudanese in Juba today is that they are ready to implement the peace agreement. And these are people who were arrested and they stayed in detention for a long time, but they have gone back in that place where they were arrested. They are trusting Juba with their lives. Why not your group?
Look, the former detainees have not been fighting the government. We are an armed group. The former detainees are individuals. They have been pardoned by the president. They are frequent visitors of Juba, and therefore they have no problem. You can't compare us with 10 people.
That's Rebel Leader Riek Machar speaking to me via a satellite phone from his headquarters in Pagak. Meanwhile, the first meeting of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, JMAC, got underway today in the capital. The commission is tasked with monitoring the security arrangement outlined in the peace deal as well as permanent ceasefire. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
This meeting is the first time since the agreement was signed that JMAC has been convened. This is an important milestone.
That is Festus Mohai, JMAC chairman and a former president of Botswana, who says he has spent the last month consulting with the IGAD heads of state.
All of them have assured me of their cooperation and support in the full implementation of the agreement and in backing this mechanism.
Today's meeting brought together stakeholders and representatives of the South Sudan government, the former detainees, top officials from the European Union, the Troika member states of the US, Britain and Norway, and civil society representatives involved in the peace negotiations. Representatives of the SPLMIO were noticeably absent. Mohai says the meeting is aimed at speeding up implementation of the peace agreement, which has been slowed by disagreements over security arrangements and other challenges.
There is a need for a paradigm shift from war to peace, from destruction to reconstruction. The end of the war has already been declared many times. Let us now make it a reality.
Mohai says all stakeholders must focus on the technical work that lies ahead. He says some of the secretariats the agreement have are yet to be formed. The secretariats include the Joint Ceasefire Military Commission, the Joint Operations Center, the Strategic Defense and Security Review, and the National Constitutional Amendment Committee, or NCAC. Mohai says the transitional government of national unity can only move into place after the NCAC is established. Mohai says reluctance on the part of both the government and SPLM in opposition to accept some of the language in the agreement has delayed the implementation of the deal.
No agreement can address every concern of every party. No agreement is a solution to all problems. The most important question is whether there exists determination to implement what was agreed. I believe there is, and that we should capitalize on the opportunity the agreement provides us to ensure a peaceful South Sudan where justice, equality, and fairness prevail.
Mohai called on both parties to the conflict to focus on creating confidence among their supporters for implementing the agreement. For VOA News, I am Waka Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. There are reports of one peacekeeper killed after a shelling in a BA town. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the thing you don't understand about yourself?
Well, I'm so short. I really wish I was very tall.
I think I talk a lot, so I don't understand why it is so.
I don't understand why I eat and I'm still the same. I'm still skinny.
What I don't understand about myself is how I'm not able to mingle with others. The way I keep to myself, I don't really understand that.
I think I understand myself fully. Yeah, I can't say I don't understand myself. I really understand myself. I have my own weaknesses, I have my own strength, and I'm aware of them.
What I don't understand about myself is how I keep giving and giving and giving, even if I don't have.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Western Equatoria State Governor Patrick Raphael Zamoi has dismissed reports that former State Minister of Information Charles Kisanga has defected to the bush with at least 20,000 youth who were called Arrow Boys to fight the government. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Governor Zamoi told reporters at a Juba news conference today it is not true that Charles Kisanga has established a rebellion in the state.
These are people who are trying to cause what they call political instability in South Sudan. Because if things were there of that nature, all of us with you could have heard about it. Not even two after him, he has nothing. Besides his only head he's carrying along with him, he has nothing.
For his part, Kasanga is playing down the governor's statement. He says he has hundreds of soldiers in training and claims more and more are joining him each day.
Today I have more than 25,000. All joining every day, hundreds of youth are joining. The training camp are not very far, just within Yambio. And the governor cannot even go just a few kilometers out of the town because it is all controlled. The countryside is controlled.
On Tuesday, Kasanga told South Sudan in Focus that he has taken to the bush to reorganize Arrow Boys in Western Equatoria State, whom he said were 20,000 strong. He said his rebel group called South Sudan's People's Patriotic Front will wage war against the government. He disputes the governor's claim that the Arrow Boys are no longer a force to be reckoned with.
The Arrow Boys are the one in control. At night, all of them are pinned in their rooms. They cannot go anywhere because everything is controlled by my forces.
Reports on iRadio say there have been fighting in some parts of Western Equatoria State, including bombings by unidentified gunships of Meduyu Payam and Mundri West. Zamoyan says things are calm in Western Equatoria State.
The state is now going towards the right direction of achieving permanent peace among its people.
Zamoy confirms that aid agencies are working to deliver food to an estimated 71,000 internally displaced persons in the state. The IDPs were displaced by fighting in some parts of the state, which flared up in recent weeks, well after the peace agreement was signed in August between President Salva Kiir and armed opposition leader Riek Machar. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
That report was prepared by Waki Simon Wudu in Juba. The United Nations says unknown gunmen shelled parts of the disputed region of Abyei, killing one Ethiopian peacekeeper. UN Interim Security Force for Abyei spokesman Daniel Adakera says UN forces are investigating the attack. Adakera says residents of Abyei town are not threatened by the attack. He says no group has claimed responsibility.
Yesterday, June 26th, at about 9 minutes after 9 o'clock in the evening, we heard shelling from the northern part of our base. There's a UNICEF base. And launched towards the town. We have a platoon based in the town near the premises of the paramount chief. Apparently, the shelling was towards that direction. And, of course, they responded. After the first one, then there was a repeated firing from the same direction, at the end of which we lost one of our Ethiopian military officers. A four-year-old girl was also a victim of the incident, and three other locals wounded who are now receiving treatment in the Abyei hospital.
And what is the condition of those who are wounded? What is their condition?
They are responding. They're not too critical. Apparently, the wounding is as a result of the sharpness from the RPG that we launched.
And who is behind this attack?
As of now, we don't want to speculate. A combined team of the military and the police are conducting an investigation. And at the end of which, we may come close to the identity of these people.
In Abyei, of course, you have the UNISFA force there in charge of security. Which other armed groups are present in Abyei?
Within Abyei box, there are no armed groups. We have air reconnaissance and patrols within our area of operation, and we are not aware of any armed group within the Abyei box. Apparently, these perpetrators come from outside, commit this, and then go back. So within the box, we don't have any armed group.
Earlier this month, there was a destruction of weapons in Abyei by UNISFA. These weapons were collected from where? Where did you get the weapons from?
They were collected from armed elements within the box. As part of our mandate to collect and destroy weapons, our troops are deployed within the box. We're under specific instruction to confiscate any arms they come across. So we've confiscated them from different elements that we came across within their beer box. So they didn't come from one particular source.
Who could be behind this shelling that happened yesterday? Because according to the description, it looks like they're using sophisticated weapons.
As a matter of fact, that adds to the complexity of trying to, at this moment, pinpoint at any particular group. It is surprising that it is coming at a time that all efforts are being geared towards finding a lasting solution to the root causes of this conflict. We don't want to speculate because that may just add to the problems. We want to carry out a detailed investigation so that we can say with certainty, perhaps, who is responsible, which group is responsible for this.
That's Daniel Adekere, a spokesman for the United Nations Interim Security Force for Abyei. He was speaking to me earlier today from Abyei. The director of Kajukeji County Civil Hospital in Central Equatorial State says the hospital is out of what he calls high-demand drugs. He says in the last 3 months alone, an average 23 people died per month at the hospital. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
Hospital Director Rufus Woja says the most affected people are children under the age of 5 and families who cannot raise enough money to buy the medicine they need from the clinic. The hospital receives 40 cartons of medicine from the National Health Ministry in Juba after every 3 months, but many times, Woja says, those cartons don't contain the medicine they need. NGOs occasionally supply medicines to the hospital, but some, like the Emergency Obstetric Care Services, no longer supply Kajukeji County Hospital. Woja says he doesn't know why. Woja, who has been in Juba for nearly 3 weeks awaiting a new supply of medicine from the Minister of Health, says sometimes the hospital is forced to buy drugs from private pharmacies, which can get very expensive. He says that's because the medicine they get from the National Ministry is not what they need.
You will find that the store is full. You will see that there are a lot of cartons around, but these are things which are not essential for the need of the hospital, or they are not used as frequent.
Woja says maternity, pediatric, and general wards are among the hardest hit, along with hospital's ward for admitting patients suffering from tuberculosis. And common diseases like malaria, typhoid, and diarrhea are on rise. Woja says an average 150 patients arrive each day seeking treatment for such diseases. Sekwat Simon, the hospital's administrator, says they also lack basic medical equipment.
We don't have scanning facilities like the US, the ultrasound, the X-rays. Sometimes it takes time to confirm. You have to depend on maybe private sector somewhere very far in a very expensive way. Some people cannot afford.
The hospital has only three doctors. Two of them are employees of the state government, and one is employed by the national government. Woja says sometimes his pay from Juba does not arrive, so he has to make the trip to the capital, which can be dangerous since unknown gunmen often ambush travelers on the Juba Kajukeji road. The hospital has been operational since Sudan's civil war. It often treats military soldiers stationed in the county. Woja says most of the buildings are now very old, which hampers all kinds of emergency procedures.
Some of the buildings are now, even the roof are leaking, and the buildings even look very old. And that is the problem that we have been trying to put right since 2013 up to now, but there is nothing new.
Hospital officials are not sure whether they will have enough medicines or money to pay for improvement of the buildings in order to keep operating much longer. Woja is asking more NGOs working in South Sudan to support the Kajukeji Hospital. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Washington.
New statistics from the United Nations AIDS Agency show alarming new information in Africa, including rise in adolescent deaths and new infections and low rates of infant testing. VOA's Anita Paul brings us this report.
AIDS is now the leading cause of death for Africa's teenagers, a statistic that AIDS experts say is a huge setback in the fight against the virus. That adds up to a tripling of adolescent HIV deaths worldwide since 2000. The UN presented this and other disturbing data this week in Johannesburg as part of its global statistical update on AIDS among children. The study also found that globally, less than half of all infants are tested for HIV. The report also found some encouraging news, such as a 41% drop in new infections in Africa since the year 2000 and 34% fewer AIDS-related deaths in that 15-year time span. The UN also reported global success in preventing mother-to-child transmission of the virus. Dr. Pierre Somsa is deputy director of the UN AIDS Regional Support Team for Eastern and Southern Africa.
The face of our failure are children and adolescents. These are the face of our failure. So today, given this reality, we are at the intersection of time. We have the intersection of achievement. We have done well. We have an intersection of opportunities. So we have seen all this new innovation. We have seen the progress made in treatment. But we have also at the intersection of challenges, serious challenges.
The report says that half of the world's HIV-positive teens between the ages of 15 and 19 live in South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya, Mozambique, Tanzania, and India. Craig McClure, UNICEF's Associate Director and Chief of HIV and AIDS, says most teens who die have simply been overlooked, a fact that shows a fatal and preventable flaw in governments and aid agencies' treatment plans.
Most of the AIDS-related adolescent deaths are among those that were born with HIV and received no diagnosis or no treatment, or children who were diagnosed were on pediatric treatment, but when they enter that difficult period of adolescence, where routine is so difficult, somehow slipped out of care in the transition from pediatric to adolescent programming, became sick and died.
17-year-old Mani Jalasin narrowly avoided that fate.
J'étais infectée à ma naissance. Quelle était ma faute?
Jalasin says she was infected at birth and rejects the shame that comes with the virus, saying it's not her fault she was born with it. She also says stigma is one issue that drives teens away from treatment. Somsa says words like these are powerful ammunition in the war to eradicate the virus by 2030. Scientific research has shown success, he says, but the social aspects of the epidemic have not been given enough attention. And with just 15 years left to achieve that goal, he says, it is time for society to start listening. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that report by Anita Paul brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Selfie by Koffi Olomide.
Kepler 45 2B, DJ Mopao, Frontiere Aliwa.
Karanga photo!
Tutu Roba.
Amiyo! Amiyo!
Baby, where you been at? I'm one and zombie day. Where you been at?
I'm a Christo day.
Ah, Jésus Seigneur. Ahmed Obakayoko, l'homme du peuple.
Amio, Chuma, Amio.
Mila Lobisto Pe.
Allez, t'improviser.
Jean-François Ndenge. Nenge Lobisto Pe. C'est bon.
Allez, t'improviser.
Vincent Gomez, Alexis.
Mila Lobisto Pe.
Allez, t'improviser.
Patrick Kimuta.
Chuma,
Chuma, Chuma.
Mila Lobisto Pe.
Allez, t'improviser.
Et le boss Paul Obambi.
Dans la photo. Tout ça est comme au cœur.
Écoute idée, écoute idée, écoute idée, écoute Sam Bengombe, écoute idée, maman m'a passé à Zébola, écoute idée, Vital Kamere.
We have been listening to Koffi Olomide with that new title, Selfie. Unfortunately, I'm not allowed to dance in this studio, but it sounds great. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.